Hey there, sports history fans. Arnie Chapman of Fantasy Football Origin Stories here to tell you about a new way to play fantasy football this upcoming season. Tailgate Fantasy Sports is the game you've been waiting for. It's a new type of fantasy football that's totally free and easy to play. Just sign up with your email, pick your favorite NFL team, and set a three-man lineup using only players from that team. Rotate two players each week and add power-ups to boost your players' scores. The best part? One random power-up drops every week. Now, it's not going to replace your existing leagues. In fact, it might be the way to get some of your favorite players on your home team. Because we all know how hard it is to get your hometown team's players in your home league, right? That is, if you truly follow some semblance of an ADP. I mean, come on. You think I'm getting Amon-Ra the Sun God at market value in my home league? Pick number 7? You gotta be kidding me, dude. Get all the rules over at tailgatefantasysports.com. But the real action happens at tailgatefantasy.io. Tailgate Fantasy Sports, where true fans rule the game. Join now and help us put the word fan back into fantasy football.
Pro Football Hall of Famer George Trafton once said, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website, "Imagine when I started playing with the Bears, we had 15 players. You were hired to play a football game. And you played it all, 60 minutes of it. We'll remember that on George's birthday later in our program. And we'll talk about the 75,000 that went to a Bears game in 1925. Derrick Henry went 99 yards, and Jerry Rice made a record-breaking catch. All coming up in just a second." PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com and of the Sports History Network.com, and we're here to bring you the podcast that'll tell you about the football history headlines of December 6th through the gridiron history. And we'll start off on December 6, 1925, at the Polo Grounds in New York. A record crowd of more than 73,000 paid to watch the Chicago Bears beat the New York Giants 19-7. American Fandom's website says the news, and they tell us that the big draw was Red Grange, as he had recently joined the Bears roster after his college schedule at Illinois had been completed. Everyone wanted to get a glimpse of the great player that just a few weeks ago was taking the college game by storm. December 6, 1930, at Varsity Stadium in Toronto, the 18th Grey Cup game was played, and the Toronto Balmy Beach squad won their second title as they beat out the Regina Rough Riders by the score of 11-6. December 6, 1939, the Downtown Athletic Club selected Iowa standout halfback Niall Kinnick as the fifth Heisman Trophy Award winner. The Hawkeyes of 1939 had an additional nickname per the Heisman.com website, the Iron Men. Kinnick was their leader, and he led the team by almost never leaving the field. He averaged 57 minutes per game. At one point in the 1939 season, he played 402 straight minutes that spanned over 7 games until a shoulder injury in the season finale forced him to sit out for a spell. It is remarkable to think that this guy left the University of Minnesota a couple years earlier because he couldn't even make their team. Niall's 1939 stats were that he threw for 638 yards and 11 touchdowns, as well as pounding out 374 more yards on 106 carries on the ground, while also drop-kicking another 41 points for Iowa. December 6, 1961. We alluded to this earlier in the week, but this day was a watershed moment in Heisman history. Ernie Davis, Syracuse's outstanding halfback, became the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy Award. If you remember back on our December 4th segment of the Football History Headlines, Ernie was also the first black player to be drafted with the top pick in the NFL draft by the Washington franchise 2 days before this Heisman announcement. What a week for this young man. Davis was a top player in the nation in 1961 as he rushed for 823 yards as a senior and scored 15 touchdowns while leading Syracuse in pass receiving with 16 catches for 157. December 6, 1975. We also foreshadowed this story earlier in the week. Archie Griffin, the Ohio State Buckeyes' prolific runner, became the first player to take home consecutive Heisman Trophy awards. He won his 41st edition of the coveted honor. This his senior season of 1975, Archie ran for 1,357 yards and led Ohio State to a perfect 11-0 record and top ranking in the nation. It is amazing to think that he was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, and he was able to achieve these great gridiron heights in front of his hometown crowd. Heisman.com brings up the fact that Griffin started all 4 years he was with the Buckeyes and became the first player ever to play in 4 Rose Bowl games. On top of that, Archie reached All-America honors in 3 times. Others in consideration for the 1975 Heisman were Chuck Muncy and Ricky Bell. December 6, 1986, the 52nd Heisman Trophy Award was announced, and it was the University of Miami's quarterback, Vinny Testaverde, who took home college football's top honor. The Hurricanes enjoyed not just the accomplishment of their signal caller taking home the Downtown Athletic Club's famous hardware for the first time by a Miami player, but also the team went undefeated that season. Heisman.com's web bio on Vinny T tells us that he ran for 4 touchdowns while tossing the pigskin for 2,557 yards and 26 more scores. December 6, 1992, at Candlestick Park, the San Francisco 49ers' GOAT wide receiver Jerry Rice caught an NFL record 101st touchdown in a 27-3 win over the Miami Dolphins. When Rice completed his awesome career, he set the bar high with 197 receptions. His closest player to Rice's great NFL record was Randy Moss, who finished with over 40 touchdowns behind Rice per the Pro Football Reference stats. And now it's time for some OnThisDay.com rapid-fire headlines. We'll go to December 6, 1997. The SEC Championship game for the 97 season came down to number 3 Tennessee, edging out number 11 Auburn in a close one, 30-29 final score. December 6, 2003, the 12th SEC Championship game was a battle of top teams as number 3 LSU crushed number 5 Georgia's aspirations in a 34-13 lopsided victory. December 6, 2008, this SEC Championship game was key to the national championship picture when number 2 Florida overcame the challenge of number 1 Alabama with a stunning 31-20 final score. December 6, 2014. If you love those close scores and big games, then the ACC Championship game of 2014 will be the one you'll want to remember. This game went right down to the wire as number 2 Florida State overcame a number 12 Georgia Tech scare to win 37-35. As we take a quick break from the headlines, let me remind you that you can also learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone, here is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message for you.
Hi, this is John Gidley. Join me each Friday for a trip into the football attic, where I'll delve into forgotten but noteworthy stories of the National Football League. You're bound to learn something new or have your memory jogged each week. That's every Friday, only on the Sports History Network and wherever podcasts are available.
December 6, 2018, at Nashville's Nissan Stadium, the Tennessee Titans running back Derrick Henry goes on a rampage as he ran for a franchise record of 238 yards and 4 scores. Henry propelled his team to a dominating 39 victory over divisional rivals the Jacksonville Jaguars. During the contest, Derrick had a 99-yard touchdown run that tied a long-standing NFL record as the longest run in league history held by Dallas Cowboys legendary runner Tony Dorsett. You'll want to see the run by checking out the link on our webpage, pigskindispatch.com, that takes you to the TennesseeTitans.com video. As we mentioned earlier in the podcast, we have a Hall of Fame birthday to talk about, and the one that we quoted at the very beginning of this podcast was George Trafton, who was born on December 6, 1896, and he was a longtime center of the Chicago Bears. Trafton, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame's biography sketch on him, played only one season of college ball at Notre Dame before jumping into the pro ranks with George Halas and the Bears. Actually, he played for the Staleys. In fact, he was the franchise's first center because he started off his career with the Staleys. Trafton indicated that in those early days, rosters were so small that players on the team were expected to play a full 60 minutes. Mr. Trafton set a couple NFL trends as he was the first offensive center to snap the ball using only one hand, and on the other side of the ball, he was the first defensive lineman to move around the field in a rover-like manner. He spent 12 seasons in the league, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined George Trafton in the year 1964. December 6, 1898, in Waco, Texas, Benny Lee Boynton, the quarterback from Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, was born. Benny's profile on footballfoundation.org informs us that he was Williams College's most famous gridiron player, as Boynton directed the Williams 11 to a total of 18 wins, 5 losses, and 1 tie. Their 1917 team had a perfect undefeated season as they registered upset victories over larger schools like Cornell and Columbia. Benny received consensus All-America recognition in 1917 and 1919. And in 1920, he led Williams' offense to some high offensive productions, such as the game against Wesleyan, where the EFs put up 50 points, and they scored 62 versus Trinity. Rensselaer Polytech gave up 63, and Hamilton saw an embarrassing 82 points put up against their defense. The National Football Foundation selected Benny Lee Boynton to go into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1962. December 6, 1918, in Ford City, Pennsylvania, Nick Drahouse, the great tackle from Cornell University, was born. The National Football Foundation selected Nick Drahouse to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1981. December 6, 1921, at Waukegan, Illinois, the Otto Graham, the great signal caller for the 41-43 Northwestern Wildcats, came into this world. According to the National Football Foundation, Graham was a well-rounded, as he was an All-American in football in 1943, an All-American in basketball in 1944. Also, Otto won letters in baseball, 2 of them, and excelled as a musician. Geez, was there anything this young man couldn't do well? It may have been a shorter list of things that he couldn't do well. Technically, in college, Graham played the position of left halfback in the Wildcats' single-wing offense. Just an editor's note, there's not to seem to be any correlation of Northwestern's success with the single-wing offense and the fact that the single-wing in today's football landscape is referred to as the Wildcat offense. Perhaps this is a story for a future episode. Anyhow, back to Otto Graham. He set numerous offensive records at his school, and they can be found on the NFF article for his bio. In 1956, the College Football Hall of Fame accepted Otto Graham into their ranks of the gridiron legends. After his college playing days ended, Graham became the first Cleveland Browns player when Coach Paul Brown signed him to as a T-formation quarterback. Otto and the Browns dominated the now-defunct AAFC Professional League, and thereafter they entered into the realm of the NFL, where they had continued on their previous successes. Graham's biography sketch on ProFootballHOF.com tells us that he played 10 seasons of pro ball and was the top passer in the respective leagues he played in 6 of those years. He was also given all-league honors in 9 of the 10 years he played professionally. The 1950 NFL title game saw Otto toss 4 touchdown passes, and in 1954's NFL championship contest, he ran for 3 and threw for 3 scores. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Otto Graham in 1965. We also want to mention that Pro Football Hall of Famer Andy Robustelli was born on this day of December 6th. And we hope you enjoy these football history headlines, and we hope you'll join us back tomorrow for December 7th edition, as we will talk about what happened in the NFL games the day Pearl Harbor was attacked. To make sure you get notified the second the next edition of the podcast is released, please put your mouse cursor over that subscribe button and your podcast player and crush it like an offensive tackle hitting a DB. You can also find all of the episodes of your favorite podcast provider at pigskindispatch.com or thesportshistorynetwork.com, where you'll also find many great nostalgic sports stories and interviews with podcasts of an all-star cast of podcast hosts and guests that share some of history's greatest sporting events. So until tomorrow, we'll see you later, sports fans. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the Official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the Official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.